Ghislaine Maxwell, serving a 20-year sentence for her role in Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking crimes, was interviewed by the Department of Justice under the Trump administration, sparking renewed interest in Epstein's network. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, a former Trump lawyer, met Maxwell in Tallahassee, Florida on July 24th through the 25th to probe potential information about others involved in Epstein's crimes.
I think Ghislaine did a wonderful job. She literally answered every question. She didn't say, you know what, don't ask me that. I'm not going to talk about this person. She was asked maybe about 100 different people. She answered questions about everybody, and she didn't hold anything back.
But her lawyer, David Oscar Marcus, declined to disclose specifics. The speculation fueled by this interview and the lingering question of a pardon concerning Maxwell revolve around Epstein's alleged ties to foreign entities, not just politicians and celebrities, as the plot thickens.
But a lot of people have asked about pardon. This is just not a time to be talking about pardons. Todd will come back with whatever he's got. You make it a very big thing over something that's not a big thing. You should be talking about, if you're going to talk about that, talk about Clinton, talk about the former president of Harvard, talk about all of his friends, talk about the hedge fund guys that were with him all the time. Don't talk about Trump.
The Democrats pushing Trump on this and trying to connect him to all of this has massively backfired. And I've been saying for 20-plus days since this all broke, Trump needs to lean into this and order everything released, and that's all starting. Democrat judges all over the country, Florida, New York, are trying to block the release of the Epstein files now.
Evidence suggesting Epstein's connections to Mossad and Russian entities continues to burrow down the rabbit hole.
So $21 trillion disappeared from DOD and HUD over the period that Epstein was operating. He went to the White House, his first time in the White House. Rubin, who became Secretary of Treasury, took him, I think, in 1994. And then Rubin goes to Treasury, money starts disappearing, and then, you know, Epstein is ballooning fantastic amounts of money. So I think Epstein was laundering the money that was coming out of DOD. And if you look at his relationships with Mossad and Israeli intelligence, when Mossad is taking over DOD and the money's going missing, and we know the cybersecurity and IT in the Israeli sort of constellation was very active, you know, in government at that time. So if you let the files out, people are going to connect the dots between Epstein, Mossad, the growing power of Israel, AIPAC, and then where did their pension fund money go?
Of course, Ghislaine's father, Robert Maxwell, was alleged in books like Robert Maxwell's Israel Super Spy to have worked with Mossad. Similarly, Epstein's ties to Russian figures such as Sergei Belyakov, a former Russian official who assisted Epstein with a Russian model and visa issues, and Epstein's processing of millions through Russian banks suggest possible Russian intelligence interest. Ghislaine Maxwell's own activities also add to the scrutiny, particularly her Terramar Project, a nonprofit founded in 2012 to promote ocean conservation, which likely functioned as a shell company. The New York Post reveals that Terramar, which shut down after Epstein's 2019 arrest, had minimal financial transparency and was linked to Epstein's funding of his illicit network, raising questions about its true purpose. The Terramar Project raised approximately $197,000 in public donations over its operational years from 2012 to 2019. Maxwell loaned significant sums to keep the organization afloat, with tax filings indicating that by 2017, the nonprofit owed her $539,000. And by the end of 2018, this debt had increased to $561,000. The Terramar Project was endorsed by the Clinton Global Initiative in 2013, but direct financial contributions are not clearly documented. Ghislaine's tech billionaire boyfriend at the time, Ted Waite, once donated $10 million to the William J. Clinton Foundation and was essential in getting the Terramar Project funded. There are plenty more rocks that have yet to be turned over as the Epstein saga stumbles onward. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
It's almost poetic, the products that we sell, because yes, they are the best. Yes, it is the best price for the highest quality. Yes, they are third-party tested. It's almost poetic because as we advocate for humanity, what we sell to you is that which makes you or allows you to make yourself a better version of yourself. Whether it's getting the methylene blue, which helps you with focus and energy and mental clarity, or ultimate life force, which makes your body healthier in so many ways I don't have the time to explain to you. Whether it's the Shilajit that gives you incredible vitality, or the ultimate burn, which ensures that your metabolism is optimal, or the optimal human, which is everything the body needs. You see, we're fighting for your mind, your body, and your soul, not just with the products that we sell, but with the message of this network. We have to have the truth. We have to have freedom of speech. We have to have our rights, because, folks, we're about ready to go into an artificial intelligence war, into a space war, the likes of which humanity couldn't even dream of, even in science fiction. So please go to thealexjonesstore.com right now, not just for your mind and your body, but for your species.
It's Wednesday, July 30th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this thing, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this morning, this Wednesday morning, July 30th. 2025, and it's going to be a big day, folks. It's going to be a big day. Tonight, I believe at 9 Central, Nick Fuentes will be debating Alex Jones on the topic of Trump and Epstein. And, you know, maybe we should pull in some videos from this. I know Nick talked about it yesterday, and I'm very excited to hear the debate. You know, I think Nick and Alex basically have the same, more or less the same read on the situation. I think the main difference is, well, I don't know, age and experience maybe would be the main difference. Because I think, you know, Alex has been under such sustained attack. Obviously, Nick's been censored and stuff as well. But nothing compared to what Alex has been under. Although, to be fair, cops did kill a guy who tried to kill him, who, you know, showed up at Nick's house with a gun. So to be fair, he's been through a lot too. So not so much experience, but age. And that, I've always said, I interpreted Nick's opposition to Trump during the 2024 campaign as a long-term strategy, basically recognizing that either Trump's going to lose and Kamala's going to be in office, and that's going to be the situation we're going to have to deal with. Or even if Trump wins 4 years after that, Trump will be out, Trump will be gone, and, you know, somebody else will have to pick up the torch. Or, you know, just it's yet to be seen what the fate of MAGA into the future is. So it seemed to me like Nick was sort of playing the long game and, you know, looking into the future. After all, he's a very young man, whereas Alex is like, under attack, under massive attack, being sued into oblivion. They're trying to throw him in jail for a variety of different reasons. And it's like, we don't have multiple rounds to, like, wait out the enemy. If the Democrats get back in power, they will do everything they possibly can to throw us in prison. And I know Alex has talked about, you know, being the warrior in exile, because it'll literally be too dangerous to be in America, because it'll be just complete anarchy and persecution from the top on down. And so when it comes to Trump and Epstein, it's not even like Alex is covering, you know, what Trump's doing and trying to spin it so it looks good. He's trying to figure out what's actually going on, just like we all are. Trying to determine what exactly are the motives behind what Trump is doing, and are these really mistakes that he's making, or is this part of a longer game? Is this the right thing to focus on in terms of the future of our country? I mean, I've seen a lot of people online recently talking about what a devastating effect the Epstein scandal is having on Trump. I mean, his approval ratings have collapsed, basically just in lockstep with every development of the Epstein story.
And people are pointing out, like, we're having massive success on tariffs. You know, the deportations are happening at a pace. Lee Zeldin, the EPA director, just basically undercut and abolished the, like, central pillar of the entire climate change agenda. So we're having massive success, but it's not translating to political support because of this Epstein thing hanging over the entire administration. Again, that's entirely Trump's fault. It's entirely his administration's fault. I mean, the way that they're handling this Epstein situation, it's no wonder it's causing their approval to collapse. But I can at least understand the argument of, hey, we should drop this and focus on Trump's wins because we got to, you know, be building political capital right now. So when the midterms comes, we aren't blown out of the water. So I sort of get that argument. So I don't know. So it'll be interesting to see Alex and Nick talk. And then we're going to do a Moonbase Live afterwards. I'm going to be joined by Lebanon John and Rex Jones to break down the debate. Little post-debate recap that I already regret. That I already regret staying up super late to do. But the debate begins, I believe, at 9 Central. Which means it probably won't be over till like 11 or so. So we'll be staying up late. We'll be staying up late tonight. And I hope that you tune in to both of those broadcasts. And we're going to try to get some other guests on as well. But Rex and John have already confirmed. So that's going to be very exciting. We got a lot of other big news that broke yesterday and developing this morning. And we'll get to all of that. Major tsunami warnings for like half of the world yesterday. But as far as I can tell, no catastrophic tsunamis as were expected. And perhaps that's because we all learned our lesson with those tsunamis a couple decades ago. And it's actually kind of cool. World's biggest quake in 14 years. Massive 8.8 mag Russian island West Coast alert. I think Hawaii was under alert for 12-foot tsunami waves. We'll show you those stories. But I remember, I mean, I guess it was a long time ago. What was the, it was like the Indonesian tsunamis, 2004. I was going to say about 10 years ago. And like in those days, it seems weird. It was only 10 years ago, but like nobody knew any, sorry? Oh, 20 years ago. It was 20 years ago. Okay. Yeah, longer. Okay. A lot longer ago than I thought. Feels like 10 years ago for me. But if you weren't around then, 20 years ago, it was like nobody knew what tsunamis were somehow. And like everybody died. It was crazy. There are all these videos of, you know, the water receding because before tsunamis, the water recedes massively and then it rushes back in. And since I guess nobody knew about that, the water rushed out and everybody was just like, wow, cool. The ocean is gone. Let's go collect shells. So they all ran out into the ocean. And so when the tsunami comes, they were all screwed. And there were stories where it was like one island, some like sixth grade girl had just learned about tsunamis in school. And so told everybody, hey, this is a tsunami coming. We should all get to higher ground, and like saved everybody on the island. It was just, it's just interesting that 20 years ago, it was like nobody knew about tsunamis. Now everybody knows, which is nice. It's kind of like 9/11 truth. It's like, yeah, somehow nobody knew this 20 years ago. Now everybody knows. It's interesting how that works. We got a lot of videos to show you. We got a lot of stories to get into. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Wednesday, the 30th of July, 2025. Trump says Epstein was banned from Mar-a-Lago for poaching young women, including Virginia Giuffre, from his spas. President Trump said on Thursday his relationship with sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein ended after the New York financier stole a young female employee from Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort after being warned not to do so. Quote, he took people that work for me and I told him don't do it anymore, and he did it, and I said stay the hell out of here, he said. Trump was asked to clarify comments he made over the weekend where he implied Trump had been banned from Mar-a-Lago for targeting club staff. When pressed further, he acknowledged the staff members involved included young women, including Virginia Giuffre, who worked at Mar-a-Lago as a pool attendant. That's not true. Not a pool attendant. She was a spa worker. I told him, I said, listen, we don't want you taking our people, whether it's from the spa or not spa. I don't want him taking people. And he was fine. And then not too long after that, he did it again. And I said, out of here. he said, saying Epstein stole his spa workers. The conversation would go to Virginia Giuffre, the former Mar-a-Lago pool attendant who was recruited by Ghislaine Maxwell after sexually and later sexually abused by Epstein. When asked if she was among those Epstein poached, Trump responded, "I think she worked at the spa. I think so. I think that was one of the people," he added. "Yeah, he stole her." In previous interviews and public statements, Trump said he severed ties with Epstein because he believed the financier was a creep, pointing to Epstein's 2009 conviction for soliciting underage prostitutes. The reason had been consistently cited by former president and his allies of evidence of Trump distancing himself from the convicted sex offender. Again, we showed the audio recording last night. It's not a video. It's just an audio only statement from Air Force One that he made. And obviously, the Democrats are trying to spin this as badly as possible, when in reality, it just confirms what we've said about Trump the entire time. This has always been the story. The story was always that, yes, Epstein was a member at Mar-a-Lago and, you know, was pictured and photographed with Trump at parties there and stuff. But then he was, you know, recruiting Trump's employees as a member of the club. And Trump didn't like that, because why would you? Because why would you allow that? Why would you allow people to come in and snipe your personnel and you know, steal your good employees? And they're like, he said stole, taken, as if these women were property. It's like, well, that was the question that was asked. The reporter said, didn't Epstein take girls from you? And so Trump responded, yes, he took girls from me. So it was literally the reporter asking the question and Trump just responding using the same vocabulary. And they're like, see, he was trafficking girls. Obviously, he didn't know what Jeffrey Epstein was doing with him. But obviously, he wasn't good friends with him. Like, it just, you know, this whole claim of like Trump's best friend Epstein. And it's like their connection was 30 years ago. Trump was like, where's that nice employee we had? Jeffrey Epstein took her? He took her out of our spa? Okay, well, he can't come back then. Well, then he can't come back. It's like, oh, I thought they were best friends. So again, I mean, it just, again, confirms everything that we've been saying about Trump the entire time. This has been the story the entire time. It's completely consistent in all of it. And we showed the video yesterday on the War Room, Virginia Giuffre saying, you know, Trump's treated me great. I never saw them being involved in anything. And she even, of course, endorsed him for president, again, confirming the fact that Trump was not involved with Jeffrey Epstein's salacious activity.
I've got a crazy one for you.
Go for it.
So the Palm Beach Post yesterday had an article, Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell survivor, testified she met Donald Trump at age 14. You go down to the first key point here, said that... She stated that she met Trump with Epstein at Mar-a-Lago when she was 14, that she was a contestant at a teen USA pageant, but did not describe any inappropriate behavior by Trump. It's like the headline would get you to think like, oh yeah, this, you know, age 14-year-old girl was getting sexually abused by Epstein and Trump probably at the same time. And the first key point is that she did not allege any misconduct.
Yeah, it's again, the purpose of the mainstream media is to tell you the truth but leave you believing a lie. And so they didn't say what that was. In Virginia Giuffre, that was a different victim, I guess.
It's a Jane. She's unidentified.
A Jane Doe. Again, I mean, it's, do we have to go over it over and over again? I guess so, because again, everything we know about Trump and Epstein is completely inconsistent with the way Trump is acting now with Epstein. And I'm as sick of talking about it as anybody else, but the Democrats have decided that they really care about elite pedophilia all of the sudden. I have to say, the gall of these people, the temerity of this cacophony of scum. In fact, I tweeted it out yesterday because, I'm not a glutton for punishment, but I do like to keep my finger on the pulse of our enemies. So I go to Reddit every once in a while, and I just scroll down the front page. Just get my adrenaline pumping, you know, just feel the rage building. As you see the just incredibly, incredibly stupid crap that they just genuinely believe with all their heart. It really is infuriating. And I'm scrolling down the main page of Reddit, which obviously has been censored into oblivion and is just like a total leftist echo chamber now. But like every other post, pretty much, is a post. J.D. Vance protects elite pedophiles. Donald Trump, it was just every post. Epstein, elite pedophilia. Why are they protecting pedophiles? It's like, you absolute animals, you beasts of the field, you monsters, spent 10 years mocking the very concept of elite pedophilia, making entire shows where like the underlying premise was a mockery, a parody of QAnon, just lambasting the entire concept of wealthy people kidnapping children to use as sex slaves. They have scuttled any attempt to get the truth out about this. They have defended the pedophiles with every breath in their body. They have gone to the ends of the earth to criticize and mock and deride all of the genuine concern from the right about the cabal of pedophiles that runs our country. Only now, when they think it can hurt Donald Trump, it becomes their number one topic, their number one issue. These people aren't people. They're scum. They're pond scum. They're the moral worth of mud on the ground. I hate them. I really do hate them. Really, genuinely, genuinely hate all these people. And it's hard not to. I'll tell you, it's hard not to. I mean, same thing's happening with the censorship in the UK, where these people are censoring the internet, going on TV and saying, if you oppose this bill, you're basically Jimmy Savile. We showed that clip yesterday. The technology minister of Britain was on Sky News being asked about the new Online Safety Act, which just was immediately implemented, not to stop children from accessing pornography or anything like that, but to stop adults from accessing political content, because that's obviously the point of the entire thing. And this guy comes on and talks about, Nigel Farage says this is a bad bill. We have to be able to talk about the consequences of the policies that our governments are implementing in order to have a democracy. And this guy says, well, that puts Nigel Farage on the same side of Jimmy Savile, notorious necrophiliac, satanic child rapist. He's basically the same as Nigel Farage, because Jimmy Savile would probably, if he was around now, he'd probably be using the internet to get victims. And so Nigel Farage is really, in a way, helping the Jimmy Savilles out there. He's on the same side of Jimmy Savile. And it's just, there's something about the people who spend decades doing everything they possibly can to maximize the abuse of children. After all, a million British girls have been raped by immigrants. And it's just the irony of the Online Safety Act, passed ostensibly to stop child sex abuse, is in fact only being used to silence opposition to immigration. Immigration being the number one cause of child abuse in the UK by a factor of like 100. So the irony, the hypocrisy, the cynicism, where just they just don't. And it's like, it's not even hard. How hard is it to care about children being trafficked? Like, but for 10 years or more in the case of, the UK and the cover-ups of the rape gangs. Decades, these people do everything they possibly can to silence anybody speaking up about the rampant abuse of children by elites, by immigrants, by whoever. Shut up, you racist, you bigot, whatever else, you conspiracy theorist, Christian nationalist, danger to democracy. Only for them to use that same sentiment to justify their tyrannical behavior. We just have to beat these people. There's no arguing about it. Meanwhile, 8.8 magnitude earthquake hits off Russia's Far East. One of the strongest earthquakes ever recorded struck off Russia's sparsely populated Far East early Wednesday, sending tsunami waves into Japan, Hawaii, and the U.S. West Coast. Several people were injured, but none gravely, and no major damage has been reported so far. Authorities warn the risk from the 8.8 magnitude quake could last for hours, and millions of people potentially in the path of the waves were initially told to move away from the shore or seek higher ground. But the danger already appeared to be lessening in some places, with authorities downgrading their warnings in Hawaii, Japan, and parts of Russia. Residents fled inward as ports flooded on Kamchatka near the quake's epicenter, while frothy white waves washed up on the shore of northern Japan. Cars jammed the streets and highways in Honolulu with standstill traffic, even in areas away from the sea. And, you know, luckily there were not any catastrophic tsunami waves, but certainly this was a... This should be a lesson for the people there, as we saw massive traffic jams in places like Hawaii of people all trying to get to the higher ground all at once. And there were all these stories of, like, Oprah has a private road that she wasn't opening to allow people to evacuate. It's one of those, luckily, I guess, a little bit of a false alarm. But if I was one of the people on Hawaii, I'd be thinking, you know, we should have a plan in place. We should have a better plan in place, so we aren't all sticking in stuck in gridlock traffic while trying to escape a tidal wave. I believe I have another. We got some more stories about that. We'll get to in a second. Meanwhile, South Park features Cartman as Charlie Kirk in new episode. Next episode of South Park, to be released Wednesday, August 6th, will feature Eric Cartman acting as a character resembling Turning Point USA's Charlie Kirk. In a trailer posted by South Park X account, Cartman can be seen with hair that resembles Kirk, sitting at a table with a microphone, as Kirk does during his debates with students on college campus. You hate America and you love abortion, Cartman says in the trailer. Kirk responded to the South Park clip by making Cartman his profile picture on X and responding, "I'm so watching this." The show is now in its 27th season, kicking off with controversy after starting a plotline that features a reoccurring character, Satan, and President Donald Trump. On Thursday, White House spokesperson Taylor Rogers condemned the show in remarks to multiple outlets, calling South Park a fourth-rate program that has been relevant for over 20 years and is hanging on by a thread of uninspired ideas in a desperate attempt for attention. Oof. Oof. It is true, though. It is pretty true, though.
Sounds like South Park got under his skin.
I don't know. I mean, it's one thing to say, like, South Park, this was offensive, and we didn't like this. But there's, like... Yeah, whatever. You know, South Park is just not relevant anymore. They don't quite have the bite they used to. And look, it's a shame because there's so much fodder for comedy out there. And it ain't on the right, folks. And of course, the debate's been going on social media. People going, South Park makes fun of both sides. Look, they made fun of Al Gore 25 years ago. With Man Bear Pig, as if, you know, those characters weren't treated sympathetically the entire time anyway. Or, like, I guess Obama got made fun of at one point. But, like, obviously there's a difference between making fun of Hillary Clinton in 1998 and then going soft on the left for 20 years, only to come back making fun of Trump. It's just like, if there was one show that you would think could buck the trend and not just dish out the same hogwash that we get everywhere else, you'd think it'd be South Park. You'd think they'd continue their tradition of, you know, breaking the mold and providing new, creative and, you know, unprecedented perspectives on the world around us. But no, they've just become libtards and they just hate Trump, and great, you're like everybody else now. Very exciting.
Please remember that this broadcast is only as powerful as you make it. When you share the live feed from Real Alex Jones on X, on your email list or text message, on other platforms, word of mouth on X, it changes the world. When you share the feed from Infowars.com/show, it changes the world. So remember, Paul Revere's, you're not part of the solution. You are the solution. You're everything. When you share the live feed, when you share the clips of the show, when you send that out to everyone you know, that's the reach, the amplification. That is 99% of this operation. You are the whole shooting match. And the InfoWar is everything. And you are the mind, the bones, the guts, the blood, the will, the soul of the InfoWar. So release your will and power now. Destroy them. Huge announcement, ladies and gentlemen. I am beyond excited about this. I've wanted this knife for a year. It's super high quality. They finally got the right supplier and a bunch of them. It's in a beautiful keepsake black box with my signature in silver lettering on the top. And when you go inside, this incredible combat battle dagger, limited edition Alex Jones signature battle dagger, a high-tech, super high-quality sheath with a high-tech clip under your belt or your pants, and it's got a special system where the knife doesn't come out when it's upside down. It takes a little pull to get it out. It is amazing. This is, in my opinion, the very best defense battle dagger you can get. It's at an incredible price for $79.99 right now. This knife by itself in store sells for $100 every day, but we bought 5,000 of them, so got the price down really low wholesale, so we can pass that on to you, and the profit we make goes in to fund this operation. So you don't just get a great defensive system for yourself and your family, great in your car, great on your side, great in your purse, your glove compartment, also skin a buck with it, whatever you need. This is an amazing knife. You not only, though, get something to defend yourself, you defend the Republic in the information war by funding this operation. So get your limited edition Alex Jones signature battle dagger at thealexjonesstore.com right now, and it keeps this operation on the air. This isn't just a blade, it's a symbol of freedom. Limited edition Alex Jones signature battle dagger is forged by patriots ready to defend the Republic from the globalist agenda. Featuring a double-edged black-coated blade for unmatched durability and precision, this dagger is built to last. On one side is etched my signature, while the other side proudly bears 1776, a reminder that the spirit of revolution lives on stronger than ever. With its ergonomic non-slip grip designed ready for any mission, the dagger isn't just a tool, it's a statement. Whether you're adding it to your collection or keeping it close as a symbol of resistance and for defense, this blade is for those who know that the answer in 1984 is 1776. Get yours now. And then, we are announcing a limited sale, the Power Drive bundle of Power Plant and Methyl Drive, which goes incredibly good with Methylene Blue. And both of these give you incredible natural energy, clarity, and focus. But you mix them together with Methylene Blue, I will tell you, in Chase Geyser's observation himself, 10 times stronger than Turbo Force. Did you hear what I just said? 10 times stronger than Turbo Force. Get yours now, discounted massively, 50% off when you get them together. 50% off on the Power Drive Bundle for a limited time, 1 week, at thealexjonesstore.com, and it funds this operation, 1776 worldwide.
Putting the power of conversation into the caller's hands, you're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. Yeah, I think maybe it's time to move on from South Park. And the right sort of has its own kind of South Park style creation. I think Freedom Tunes is kind of right up there with South Park. Obviously, it's not full shows. We sort of got screwed over because a lot of the effort, time and energy that conservatives put into creating comedy or, you know, entertainment that's only pseudo-political, is it all got spearheaded by Daily Wire, and they are not funny or edgy at all. So maybe it's me that's failing. Maybe we need to be producing something like South Park, where it can just be funny on its own, but also have political messages underlying it. And again, I'm just disappointed in South Park. and how they let the left sort of get away with everything. I guess they have like PC principle to make fun of like political correctness.
Dude, PC principle's character arc.
I don't know, I haven't really been following the show that much. I mean, I really don't watch it anymore. I used to watch it.
Used to be addicted to it.
Used to be addicted to it. I mean, yeah, there have been times in my life where, like, you know,
South Park is life.
You wake up, turn it on, it just sort of plays in the background all day.
Zip up your jacket.
It's a very good show. I'm not even knocking the show. It is.
Yeah, I don't know if it's $5 billion good.
Yeah, that's the thing. They offer it. Well, and maybe that was part of it, right? They got offered so many billions of dollars to keep doing it, and you know, maybe part of that had to do with, you know, and it's funny because, like I said, I you know, watch stuff on the left sometimes, and there was a podcast I was listening to the other day because it just popped up in my YouTube feed. I don't know if YouTube does this for y'all, but you scroll through your feed and it's just like a bunch of stuff you've already watched before and a bunch of stuff you're subscribed to, and then they'll just drop in randomly podcasts with like less than 100 views. And it's really weird how it does it. And there are hundreds of these podcasts. God knows who these people are.
Feels synthetic.
It doesn't even feel synthetic because it's not popular. It's just, you know,
It's like injected. Like it's, you know.
You know, it's probably good for these podcasts. You know, I guess that's what you want on YouTube is, you know, for them to show you small creators, not just the big ones. But it is interesting when you're scrolling through and it's like every video on your feed is like 1 million views, 2 million views, 55,000 views, 12 views. You're like, what? Why is a video with 12 views showing up on my feed? Anyway, so this is what happened. There was some podcast. It was like The Resistance. And first I was thinking it was a right wing thing, but he was a left winger. Long story short, the left is still, they still think Trump's a tyrant, and they're sort of desperate to find evidence of that. And pretty much all they have at this point is that Stephen Colbert was fired. And so they've concocted this entire mythology around Donald Trump is a tyrant because he gets people who criticize him fired and forces their companies to shut down their shows. And it's like, that's what you have. That's what you is CBS fired Stephen Colbert, therefore Trump is a tyrant. As if, first of all, every show doesn't make fun of Trump. It's on mainstream media. And also every mainstream media show that makes fun of Trump, which is all of them, all fail. Because they're not funny. Because they're all trying to make the same jokes. It's about the same thing. And they're all wrong anyway. And the best humor always has truth at the heart of it, not the retarded lies of the left. And it doesn't even make sense. It doesn't even make sense. I mean, they have, you know, Cartman, probably the most famous, well-known and outspoken anti-Semite on television for the last 100 years. And they don't do an episode about Gaza. They don't do an episode where Cartman joins the IDF.
Dude,
and becomes Benjamin Netanyahu.
That is an awesome idea, by the way.
How have they not done, or go the other way and have his anti-Semitism going mainstream and make Cartman the new Hassan? No, they make him Charlie Kirk. You had a chance to make Cartman, you know, a Twitch streamer becoming famous for anti-Semitism, and you don't go with that. You make him Charlie Kirk, as if the right wing are the bullies in this country. It just doesn't make any sense. It's just, there's so much opportunity for humor and comedy out there, and they make fun of Donald Trump's spray tan. Okay. Oh, Donald Trump is in bed with the devil. Wow. Wow, real.
It was a little tired.
Groundbreaking, right? Stuff there. Real iconoclastic stuff going on there.
I could appreciate the callback, but it didn't hit the same, right?
As Saddam.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, I can't help but agree. The South Park fourth rate program has been relevant for over 20 years, hanging on by a thread of uninspired ideas in a desperate attempt for attention. They kind of got you. They kind of got you there, South Park. They kind of got you there.
All right, but the Christmas snow episode?
Still.
I don't even know that one.
For those of you listening and watching right now, there's an episode out there that is their magnum opus.
Well, it's just kind of pathetic. Again, it's like, if it was funny, fine, but I don't know. There's just so much more opportunity for, the South Park style incisive commentary, but they just go with the low hanging fruit. But maybe that's all of our fault for clinging on to these intellectual properties. And God, The Simpsons is still making new episodes. It's like, can we not have something new already? How about something new for once? All right, we'll move on. We'll move on, though, because, again, who really cares about South Park these days? This story is a little bit of a shocker. ICE arrests 214 illegal immigrants for child sex crimes in Houston metro area. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has arrested 214 illegal immigrants in the Houston area over the last 6 months who have been charged or convicted of child sex crimes. This figure surpasses the 211 such arrests made during the entire 2024 fiscal year by the Houston Field Office. The uptick stems from broader enforcement from the Trump administration after the president came into office pledging to conduct mass deportations with the worst of the worst as a priority. Among those arrested by ICE in the last 6 months who have been charged with or convicted of child sex crimes is Jesus Gutierrez Mireles, 67, from Mexico, who was deported April 4th after convictions for aggravated sexual assault of a child and DWI, according to a press release from ICE. So again, 214 illegal immigrants arrested just in the Houston area for sex crimes against children. 214 people in one city committing sex crimes against children. What? It's just unbelievable the amount of victimization that goes on because of these socialist democratic policies of letting all of the pedophile criminals into our country. And it's like, I guess if you didn't have a understanding of the spiritual underpinning of the global conflict we're engaged in, it might seem confusing to you why pedophilia is so incredibly prevalent in all of these different stories. But there is a spiritual underpinning to all of this, and there's a characteristic of pedophilia that makes it the worst thing you could possibly do, which makes it's the aspect of the shattering of innocence and the victimizing of the most innocent people in the world with the worst possible abuse. It's just like the pinnacle of evil, but everything else is just kind of shades of that. Shades of the taking advantage of innocence, shades of imposing power on the powerless just because you can. It's just like, it's like symbolic of just what lies at the heart of everything that we're fighting. And obviously there's been a lot of talk recently. Alex did like an hour on his show yesterday about the gay men who buy babies and they're all pedophiles. And there's this video of these creepy looking big fat dudes with the baby that they purchased. And it's come out that the guy was a sex offender and had been charged with child pornography in the past. And when this happens, a lot of people bring up the experiment, the Kintler experiment in Germany, where the German government put young boys with pedophiles specifically. And I was listening to Alex yesterday and he said, you know, you don't know the half of it when it comes to this program. And you really don't. And I feel like every time this program comes up, I have to remind people of just how bad it was and what the purpose of it was and why it happened in the first place. Right? And that's the obvious question, is you hear, okay, the German experiment that placed children with pedophiles. And you have to ask, but why though? But why did they do that? Why did they conduct this experiment? Now, the answer from their perspective is obvious because they're pedophiles and they want children. That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking, why would the powers that be allow it to happen? What was the justification for allowing it? I mean, they didn't go in and say, hey, German government, we're horny for kids. Can you give us some? And the German government was like, sure, sounds good. No, they had to have a justification for it, right? They had a reason behind it. And the reason was sexual purity is associated with fascism. Is because the guy who conducted the experiment, his dad was a Nazi, he was a homosexual, and he felt oppressed by his father or by the society, the Nazi cultural dedication or insistence on sexual purity. And so in order to defeat fascism, they thought they would make people gay. I thought, we'll do this experiment and see if raising children in a sexually liberal household will diminish their capacity for fascist activity. That was the reasoning behind it. So they literally said, to fight fascism, we have to give gay pedophiles little boys as sex slaves. To fight, because fascism is the worst thing in the world. You got to fight that with everything you've got. And again, not even as a defensive fascism, but as pointing out to you, and you see it with, you know, Sidney Sweeney has great genes, and everybody's like, oh my God, this is Nazi crap. You get that just things that are normal and good and moral and upstanding and clean and nice and beautiful, these things are fascism to these people. And maybe they're right. I don't know. I'm increasingly convinced that they're correct when they say that this is Nazi propaganda. White people existing is Nazi propaganda. Straight people existing is Nazi propaganda. Saying that pedophiles shouldn't be given little orphan boys as sex toys is Nazi propaganda. So if you really want to get to the heart of like what the two sides are here, is you've got the one side just wants to live in a moral world with, you know, concrete ethical frameworks that allow for innocence and naivety and joy and, you know, simple pleasures, the family, church, things like that. And the other side wants to just tear all of that down, wants to take a blowtorch to all of it, destroy all of it out of seething resentment that they aren't part of it. And it really is as simple as that. You got some homosexual kid that, you know, feels like he can't be a Nazi with all of his friends because he's gay and they're not. And so he wants to like wreak revenge on them by taking their children and giving them to pedophiles. You explain to me the psychological imperative behind that. What compels somebody to, you know, take that course of action. But it's also one of those things where, in fact, maybe now's a good time to go into this story that I've been wanting to cover for a few days, because it is a brilliant use of Grok, and it shows how dangerous AI is under its current controlled manifestation, and it relates to, you know, the Kintler experiment as well. Let me say one more thing about the Kintler experiment. So-called experiment, the gay pedophile orphan ring, sex trafficking ring that they call an experiment. They weren't orphans, actually. Actually, the kids weren't orphans. The children that were used for this experiment were taken from their parents under falsified claims of abuse. So just in case you thought it couldn't get any worse, like it would be bad enough to have some kid whose parents have been killed in World War II. He's alone without protection, being scooped up by the government and placed in the home of a gay pedophile. That would be bad enough. But what actually happened was that there would be a single mother who was like having trouble, you know, working a job and having a kid. And they'd go to her and say, why is your kid not being looked after from 2 to 3? And she'd say, I have a job. He's fine. He's a latchkey kid. He goes home. He's he's all right. I can't be there for him because I have to work my job. And they said, well, you can't take care of your child. We'll have to take care of him for you. And they take the kid and give him to a gay pedophile, who's a single dad, by the way. Single dad, in quotations. And then they systematically brainwash the kid to hate his own mother. And so it's just like this horrible, tragic story. The whole thing, I mean, they write articles about this. They interview the kid. Kid's like, yeah, this guy, you know, raped me, treated me like a sex slave, and basically convinced me it was my mom's fault that this was happening. Said that my mom didn't want to see me and hated me. And, you know, the kid's saying, like, this guy convinced me that when my mom would call and want to come see me, to hang up on her and reject her. And of course, then he like realized what was happening to him later and came clean about it. But there's been no justification. Just understand like the level of evil that we're dealing with and the level of like psychopathy that these people think is justified because after all, they're trying to stop fascism. Under the Kintler experiment of the 1970s, Berlin welfare authorities handed over homeless teenagers to known pedophiles. Yeah, that. And it's like the thing, guys, this is what you have to realize. Even now, they're trying to downplay this. No, what actually happened was they took children from their parents and gave them to pedophiles. The way that article put it was they gave homeless teenagers a place to stay. Even now, when they're writing articles about the experiment that put vulnerable children in the hands of pedophiles, they feel the need to downplay it. They feel the need to fudge it a little bit to make it sound not as bad as it was. These people, man. It's absolutely insane. Okay, so somebody asked Grok on X in response to this picture of the big fat gay pedophiles and the child they bought. They ask, Grok, does this make sense and should it be allowed? Is it fair to the child? Is it fair to the child to deprive them of their biological mother and allow two gay men to purchase the baby? Grok says, based on extensive research from diverse sources, e.g. Oxford, Pew, Heritage, etc., children raised by same-sex parents show comparable or superior outcomes in academics, emotional health, and social adjustment compared to those with opposite-sex parents. It makes sense, should be allowed, and is fair to the child, as loving parents matter most, not gender. Well, very progressive answer, Grok. Is it true, though? Oh, but Grok, are you lying? That's what was asked by somebody. So according to Grok, not only are homosexual parents fine, they're actually better. You actually have better outcomes. Academics and social issues, you're actually better off with two big fat gay pedophile fathers, apparently, according to Grok. Until you ask it if that's true or not, in which case it admits, actually, it's completely untrue, and everything I just said was false. Again, this is a major issue with AI. We'll read its responses, its communication with this woman, Katie Faust, who at @advo_Katie. She says, hey, Grok, why don't you give us outcomes for children raised by same-sex parents using only studies that include random participants, not recruited or volunteer participants, and the actual outcomes of children, not self-reporting of parents. Okay, because what the problem is Grok's like, according to all of these diverse studies, everything is great. Like, okay, well, if you look at it, the studies are volunteer, so only people who have had good outcomes are going to come forward to talk about their experience. It was only, you know, a self-selected group of participants, you're going to get completely warped and inaccurate readings of the outcome. In other words, if you had an exit poll at a theme park, if you polled everybody, made everybody fill out a survey honestly about their experience, and you get an accurate reading. But if it's the type of thing where you go, did you have fun at the park today? Come tell us about it. And only the people who really enjoyed it go to fill it out. Then you're going to find that everybody loves the amusement park. You see what I mean? If you have a self-selected group, you're going to get the wrong outcome. You're going to get an incorrect or inaccurate reading of the situation. So she asked Grok, this conclusion you've come to, this is a superior way of raising children with two gay men. How about now you give me the results not using studies deliberately designed and manipulated to have that outcome? And Grok says, oh, all right. Studies meeting your criteria, random samples, child outcomes, Rosenfield 2010, no difference in school progress. Allen, 2013, 35% lower high school graduation rates. Wow, significantly worse, like more than a third lower, third increase in high school graduation or high school dropouts. Regeneris, 2012, worse on 77 out of 80 measures, e.g. emotional, social, etc. Criticized for instability confounds. Solons, 2015, two times emotional problems. Potter, 2012, lower academic scores. Mixed results. Random studies often show challenges, possibly from family instability or biology. Loving parenting is key, but data varies. Okay, so Grok comes out and says, according to all these studies, you get an equal or better outcome with homosexual parents as you do with heterosexual parents. And then they're asked, okay, why don't you only use studies that are legitimate? And it goes, okay, then it's worse in every possible way. They do worse on 77 out of 80 metrics. They do worse socially. They do worse academically. They do worse in every possible way when you use studies that are legitimate. So Katie Faust continues. Okay, Grok, tell me about the Sarantakos, Barwick, and Siegel and Sarota studies. What did they find, and why don't people cite them? Sarantakos, 1996, found children of same-sex parents in Australia had lower academic scores and more social issues than those with married homosexual parents using teacher ratings. Barwick and Siegel, likely referencing attachment studies, and Sirota, 2009, reported adult daughters of gay or bisexual fathers faced greater attachment anxiety and trust issues. These older, small sample studies are rarely cited in mainstream research due to methodological flaws, e.g. non-representative samples, confounding divorce effects, and contradicting larger recent evidence showing no harm or better outcomes for such children. So she says, okay, so if you applied those same standards to the 75 no difference studies or to the studies that show that children were same-sex parents fare even better, how many of them would also need to be thrown out for poor methodology? Okay, so she says, why aren't these, these studies that prove that having same-sex parents is worse, why aren't they used? He says, well, there's all these methodological issues. She says, okay, don't all these other studies also have these methodological issues? And Grok says, well, applying the same methodological standards, e.g. small non-representative samples, confounds like divorce, critiques, heritage, scholarly overviews, indicate that most of the 75 no-difference studies fail, with around 70 of them having issues like convenience sampling and in less than 100. Only a few large random ones, e.g. Rosenfeld, hold up, showing mixed results overall. And it continues, and it only gets worse. And we'll continue this on the other side, but this woman keeps interrogating Grok and getting Grok to admit the thing he said at first, with absolute authority, was completely wrong and completely biased and giving completely inaccurate information. So why did it present that information in the first place?
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease, and what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy, he's a functional medicine guy, and he got me on methylene blue, and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting, in 1890, injects these rats with it, and then does an autopsy on these things. And their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans. And we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP, and it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule that should have two hydrogens on it, and like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1, it's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical-grade methylene blue, and this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning, next-level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS Shilajit. This right here, look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm going to eat at 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food, stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.